B63. Number 1B.
We go to the next reference, still on the level of divine science. Verse says that Christ is the ideal of God. Now suddenly, she defines God quite differently, not just as the self-expression of God, but also as ideal. So we have to see something more, namely that the Christ, in its activity or in its office of always being self-expressing the Word of God, always expresses the highest that is possible. Ideal is always the highest, the most excellent form. That's the ideal, namely the most excellent form that is possible, so to say, the optimum of good. And so we see that the Christ has always a terrific ideal which the Christ wants to bring forth and to manifest. So again, this gives us a sense, if we are in the 6,000 and 7,000 year period and not in the 4,000 and 5,000 year period, gives us a sense that we have to entertain in our consciousness that what's going on in the universe is always Christ's ideal. No matter if humanly we feel everything is going the wrong way, that everything is a catastrophe in the world. We live in another world, we live in the science of spirit, which dominates the world. The science of spirit controls the world. So we do good if we entertain more and more a sense that is constantly with us, that we culture, that it's constantly as a hum, as a background music with us, which says, well, God has a Christ. That Christ is God's own ideal, meaning that the highest, the maximum, the optimum of good is going on and is right now expressing itself. Now, each one asks now at this point, do I have that kind of feeling? If we don't have it, we just acknowledge and are honest enough to say, apparently I don't believe that God has a Christ. I don't believe it. See, we always must be questioning ourselves and see what is actually in our consciousness. Is actually in our consciousness the sense that there is a Christ. I know that if we are asked by anybody and say, do you believe that there is a Christ? Everybody would jump up and say, naturally. But it isn't naturally. It is very foreign. Because the moment we ask, well, do I have that inner constant attitude that only the ideal is constantly being expressed, then I think most of us or every one of us will say, no, I don't entertain that constantly. Or am I so bad that you feel, well, we do it, but Max doesn't do it. Or is it that you do it too? I think you do it too. Yeah. Well, such an analysis is good because it makes us aware where we have to work. Can you see what our demonstration must be in the 6,000 and 7,000 period? We have seen that is a demonstration, namely to demonstrate that we demonstrate God. We would demonstrate God if we would demonstrate that we have constantly that conscious consciousness that there is a Word of God, and that that Word of God is constantly as the Christ expressing itself at every moment, at every place, and expressing itself as an ideal, as the highest possible idea of God. Do we have that? If we don't have that, it is because we have not found the tonality of the Word and the tonality of the Christ. Therefore, the demonstration of us is, in the first place, to demonstrate that that consciousness is our present consciousness. A side note, could I convey with what I just said what we were contemplating yesterday when we said that the demonstration of the 6,000 and 7,000 year period is to demonstrate God and not in the first place to demonstrate physical harmony? Now perhaps we have been wondering yesterday, well, what does that mean to demonstrate God? Well, here we have the first incident, or the first example, that would show this would be a demonstration. This would be a terrific demonstration, a much bigger demonstration than a nice, good physical healing. To demonstrate that God is within us, which is Emmanuel, which is the Christ also. So, you can ask me, well, how can I do that? Well, the only answer is, as we have seen with all those root notions of being, that we say that we must sit back, that we must ponder and contemplate what these capitalized terms mean. We must contemplate first through the ideas that this capitalized term express, say here through the ideas that express the Christ, what makes up the concept of Christ, contemplate that, being still within ourselves, contemplate what these ideas mean until those ideas become a tone and I have a constant conscious feel or attitude of what is termed biblically, the Christ. I think that attitude, that feel, you will then no more define through the term Christ. Because Christ is a term, is not a reality. It's a symbol for a reality. But what we feel then is what that symbol means. But it will therefore be so that the symbol begins to disappear and you have just a sense, a spiritual sense, a spiritual touch, a spiritual tone of that thing that says that the infinite is constantly expressing itself in the most ideal way possible and conceivable. A sense of it is. Think what would happen to us if we would walk around all day and no matter what we do, if we have to go to the office or if we have to cook or if we have to shop or if we have to do whatever we have to do, that if we go around the whole day and there is constantly that sense that the maximum of good is going on, is right now expressing itself. Isn't that something? Why shouldn't that be possible if the counterfeit is actually possible? Actually, people do go around from morning to night, always having an inward unconscious feeling, any moment something bad can happen, any moment something can be a catastrophe. Any moment I can get sick. Any moment I can have an accident. Any moment I can lose my job. Any moment I can make a mistake. Isn't that mortal mind's antichrist? That is very natural to mortal consciousness. Why shouldn't the Christ be just as natural to divine consciousness? It's only because they have been brought up that way, the false way. Right from the beginning, you know, Mother said, be careful, don't fall, you can hurt yourself. You know, right from the beginning we are put into a surrounding, first in the family and then in the world, that is always full of the Antichrist, which means full of the concept that any moment error can manifest itself, can express itself. So, can we see that the demonstration that we have to make in our age is to demonstrate that we have a Christ consciousness? That would be a demonstration. Naturally, such a Christ consciousness as it's depicted here on the level of divine science will always have its translatability to the level of absolute Christian science and to the level of Christian science, where then Christian science said, this consciousness will heal the sick. It doesn't exclude, really, then, the level of Christian science. But it is the source from which we nurture, really, our demonstration. And so, I think this becomes quite clear that we have to make demonstrations, but that those demonstrations are very different in its purpose and goal than they were at the beginning of this century. At the beginning of this century, the Christian scientist was so impressed by the fact that spiritual ideas can heal the physical body, that that healing aspect was predominant and was seen to be really the purpose and the aim and the core of Christian science, forgetting that that is only the spin-off, so to say, the fallout of a much, much higher demonstration, namely the demonstration that we demonstrate really the capitalized terms. Here, the Christ. Very often, when we read the textbook and we come to the term Christ, Mrs. Eddy says Christ, truth. Or she says Christ or truth, more or less making those two capitalized terms synonymous. She does not so often combine, say, the Christ with life or with love. She combines the word with life, and she combines Christianity with love. But the accent of the Christ is Christ truth. Now why? Have you ever thought about that? Why don't you say Christ life or Christ, comma, love? She never does that really. She always put very often Christ, comma, truth. Well, what is truth? What is the synonymous term truth? We know that truth is that which affirms itself, which claims itself. See, giving us the metaphysical tone of the biblical term son or heir. The heir claims what the father has, affirms what the father has. So truth is affirmative. Truth claims what it is, and so is, in a way, gives us the same tonality as the Christ, because the Christ also says, I am the Son, I express the Father. It's the self-claiming, the self-expression of the Father. That's the Christ, but we also could see that that is of the nature of truth. Yes. Now, let's see how that Christ ideal translates itself to the level of absolute Christian science. Are you aware, really, that these levels here show, so to say, a translation office? If we start from the top, then it translates, science itself translates itself into the form of divine science, translates itself into the form and phenomena of absolute Christian science, and translates it right down to the level of Christian science. So that those levels really give us the sense of translation in the way that it shows that the infinite, which knows no sin, can translate itself right down to the point where we have to handle sin, sickness, and death. So they are different states of altitude of consciousness, and therefore we really can see that there is a high altitude, as science itself, then translating that to divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. So it gives a dimensional sense. Now, again, we are aware that the moment we consider a subject dimensionally, that we have that most interesting phenomena, namely that through the translation, the identity that is under discussion here, Christ, changes its nature, changes its outward phenomena. Is that clear? You know, we are brought up in another way. We are brought up that something is something and nothing else. Yes? That's an old concept that an identity is defined that it never changes, that it remains what it is, and can therefore always be identified in the same way. But also, way back in philosophy, one can see that the philosophers were beginning to think that that may not be so. And they began way back to the Greeks, they began to see that there are always levels of consciousness to be considered. So the question that we have here, that we have various levels of consciousness, is a very old philosophical insight. But it is so that they really had difficulty in finding a true answer to this, what we call dimensional consciousness. And Mrs. Eddy brought in this dimensional consciousness in showing that we can think on the level of science itself, or on the level of divine science, or absolute Christian science, or Christian science. But that we must see that the identity of being that is under discussion takes on different phenomena, changes its appearance. You know, I always try to show that with that cylinder. That picture is clear to you. You have it also here in the study. 59, study 8. Yeah, on 59, just a few pages before that. Perhaps I explain it again, though I have it in the wonders book, now in the synonym book. Can you see, that's, by the way, how scientists of today explain it. This is actually not a symbol that I have made up. It's quite a common symbol. You have it already in Köstler's book, where he shows, you have in the middle that half cylinder. Can you recognize that half cylinder in the middle? That has three dimensions. It has length, breadth, and height. It has three dimensions. If we translate that to a two-dimensional wall right behind it, then that appears as a rectangle. See? So a three-dimensional form translated to a two-dimensional form changes its appearance. Suddenly, you have a rectangular and no more half a cylinder, and you say, these are two absolutely different things, they have nothing to do with each other. Is that clear? You would say, well, a rectangle has nothing to do with a half a cylinder. Huh? And yet, it is the half cylinder. But translated. So they are actually identical. It's still the half a cylinder. They are identical, only viewed from different levels, from different dimensions. Or if we take that same and have the light from the right to the left and throw that shadow on the wall, again a two-dimensional, it becomes a square. Becomes a square. Suddenly changes again its appearance. Or if you put the light on top and throw the shadow on the bottom, you get that semicircle. So we have here on this one four phenomena. Each one looks completely different than the other one, and yet they are the same fundamentally. They are the same. They are the same identity, but appear differently. So in the same way, you can see if that half cylinder, say, would be Christ, and we say now, how does that Christ look like if I translate it on another dimension? Then every time it appears differently. So if we go back to page 66 and we come to the translation of divine science to absolute Christian science, then Mrs. Eddy will explain the Christ in a different way. She will say, well, the Christ is Immanuel, which means God with us. Can you see, God with us is something very different, say, than Christ is the ideal. It's very different. God with us. And you say to yourself, well, these two definitions have nothing in common. And yet they are the same, if viewed from a different level. What is the level of absolute Christian science? The level of absolute Christian science is always there where our consciousness asks, how does principle relate to the idea? How does God relate to man? So when I take the Christ and ask, how does the Christ relate to man? Mrs. Eddy says, he does relate by showing that God is with me, that God is with man, and gives the relationship of God to man. Isn't that clear? Not quite, huh? Yes, it is. Huh? Or am I repeating things that you know already too well? Well, it may be so. So again, she would say Christ is the true idea of God. Again, you have the relationship of God to idea, of principle to idea, God to idea, and says, God has an idea. At the top it was that God is, that Christ is the ideal, and now that ideal says, I have ideal ideas. I translate the ideal to ideas, where every idea is ideal. So you have really Christ is the true idea of God. Or she also says that Christ is the divine idea of God. She says that Christ is the spiritual idea of God. You can see that suddenly she begins to explain the Christ as idea. First as ideal, but now as idea. Well, that always seems to be quite a difficult point, actually, that one always is asking now, what is the idea of God? If Christ is the idea of God, what does that mean? And I think I cannot answer better at this moment than what I have written in that little booklet, The Christ Idea. I think in there I have summarized really, or tried to define as clearly as I can at the present moment, what the Christ idea is, what is meant that God has an idea. So, if ever you come across again to this question and say to yourself, what does that actually mean, that God has an idea, that the Christ is the idea of God, the true idea of God, the spiritual idea of God, the divine idea of God, what does it actually mean? The best thing I think you can do is to go to that little booklet and study the first few pages deeply and think about it instead of reading it, and try to ponder it and try to think about it. Because actually it is so that I have seen with every student, I have seen it very much with me, that it takes quite some time to really ask, what does that Christ as the idea of God mean? What is meant by it? It has taken me always years and years, and always have gone over it and say, what does it mean? Until finally you begin to touch it. And I think the way it touches us is perhaps described in that little booklet. It means that that God has a Christ. It means that that Christ is the idea of God, which means that God has set a goal, that God has set an ideal, and that God has conceived of that ideal, that's the idea of it, and that God is going to do everything to fulfill that what God has set out. Can you say set out to do? That God is going to fulfill the goal God has set. That's the idea.